Most people do not like turbulence on airplanes or in life. Would you agree with that? Most people don't like turbulence, right? Because when you're 30,000 feet in the air, I don't know about you, but things need to operate correctly at 30,000 feet in the air because there's a lot at stake, right? And similarly in life, you know, we've only got one life. You've only got one shot at making a difference, at walking in God's purpose, making an impact in the world. You only have one shot, and so the stakes are high, which is why most of us, we do not like turbulence. But here's the thing. Sometimes turbulence is good news. Sometimes turbulence is good news. One of the most interesting airplane rides I've ever been on was out of an airport about the size of a gas station. Oh, yeah, one of those airports. I was in a small town, and I was flying somewhere, and let me tell you, like about if you go to Sheetz right across the road, the airport, including the loading dock for all to getting on the plane, was the size of the Sheetz. Okay, so you look to your left, all right, 10 paces to your left or to your right, my left would be the gift shop, and then you turn your head this way, 10 paces that way would be the check-in, well, the security check-in. And then two paces right after that would be the terminal. And there was only two of them, one and two. You couldn't get lost in this place. Right ahead of you was where you did your check-in and the bag. You dropped your bags off, and then you turn your head this way, and you could see all the bags circling to pick them up when you leave. I mean, all you had to do was go like this. You could see the whole airport. Okay, so I go in. I check in my bag, and then I'm in the terminal, and I'm waiting to board the airplane. And, you know, usually in most airports, when you get on the airplane, you get in this little, it's almost like a tunnel that you walk through to get on the airplane. They call us to get on the airplane, so ready to go. And we walk outside. And we're walking outside, and I see this little itty-bitty airplane. And you have to climb up the stairs to get on the airplane. It was a propeller plane. Yeah, and I like airplanes. But, you know, as soon as I saw that propeller airplane, I thought about all the plane crashes. Whenever a plane crashes, there's always somebody in a propeller plane. And so we get on the plane, and I'm the only one in my row because there's only one seat in the whole row. And we start going, you know, making this thing. And then suddenly we hit some turbulence. Now, I'm a strange kind of person because I actually like turbulence. Because it feels like a roller coaster, you know, going up and down. But this was different because that plane was rocking and we were going up and down and I said, this is not good. And that was the first time I remember in my adult life really being nervous. Like, are we gonna make it? Is this plane gonna be able to handle all this turbulence? And that same kind of state of nervousness and fear and worry that you feel when you hit some strong turbulence in the airplane is the same thing that happens in your life when some turbulence hits your life. And turbulence is anything that makes you feel uncertain about tomorrow. Anything that puts a question mark in your heart and in your mind about, am I going to make it? Am I going to reach my destination? Am I going to achieve my goal? Is this all going to work out? It could be something that happens in your family or on your job. Maybe they say on your job, we're downsizing. Turbulence. Or your child comes home with some troubling news. Turbulence. Or there's some conflict in your family or in your relationships, in your friendships. Turbulence. Anything that makes you feel uncertain, am I going to make it? It could be changes in your environment and you feel like you're in unfamiliar territory and it just makes you uneasy. Anything that makes you feel uncertain about tomorrow is turbulence. But sometimes turbulence is good news. Because, you know, sometimes even though everyone else on the airplane might be nervous, who's the one person who's never nervous? The pilot, right? The pilot. Why? Because when we're sitting in as a passenger and we're just looking out the window, all we see is the ground way down there. and we see the plane rocking, and we look over to see who's sitting next to us, and we see them sweating. But the pilot is in the cockpit, and the pilot has all the instrumentation he or she needs to determine where the turbulence is coming from, how strong it is, whether or not it's a threat to destroy the plane. So while everyone else might be nervous, the pilot is never nervous because he or she understands the turbulence. Sometimes our peace in the midst of turbulence depends on whether we're looking at it through the eyes of a passenger or through the eyes of our pilot. And Jesus is the pilot of your life. If you've given your life to Christ, then Jesus is the one flying your plane. And Jesus knows what kind of turbulence your life can handle. And he knows where the turbulence is coming from. And he knows how long it's going to last. And he knows everything about it. So Jesus is not nervous, but you are. And I am. And so the reason why I want you really need to pay attention today is because in turbulent times, your peace will depend on your perspective. And we're going to talk about the perspective you need to have peace in turbulent times. The perspective you need to have peace in turbulent times. Because let me tell you, turbulent times come to everybody. Doesn't matter how good you live your life, how well your life is going, how perfect you think things are, at some time or another, you're going to hit turbulence. You're going to hit turbulence at work. You're going to hit turbulence in church. You're going to hit turbulence in your family, in your marriage, at school. You will encounter turbulent times. How do you have the proper perspective when the winds begin to blow? And we're going to be coming out of the Gospel of John. We're continuing our journey through John's Gospel. And one thing we need to remember before we dive in is that John's Gospel is one particular portrait of Jesus. There's four Gospels, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, right? And each of these Gospels is not simply a historical document, it's primarily a theological document. Each one is a theological document. It's not, they're not just Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They didn't just sit down and start to write, okay, what did Jesus do on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and just kind of catalog the chronology of Jesus's life. That wasn't their agenda. Their agenda was to speak truth pertaining to the significance of who Jesus was, why he came, and why his message matters. And each one of them gives a unique portrait of Jesus. Matthew, for example, Matthew talks a lot about his message concerning Jesus is a lot about Jesus being a teacher. And in Luke's gospel, one of his primary thrusts is to portray Jesus as somebody who prioritizes people on the margins of society. And in John's gospel, his priority is on Jesus being I am, being God. That's why he starts off by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then later on says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. All right? And so the gospel accounts of Jesus' life is kind of like, it's kind of like modern day filmmaking. If you've ever seen a movie about a historical figure, the details of the movie may not be exactly according to how things really happened, but the director will take creative liberties in order to send a specific message to help you see the character the way they want you to see the character, to tell the story so that you can fully grasp the impact of their life. I remember watching a movie about Malcolm X. It's an old movie, way back in the day, a three-hour movie, Malcolm X, directed by Spike Lee. And I remember watching it, and there was a time in the movie where he was giving a speech during an interview. And I was watching the interview. I said, well, that's not where Malcolm said that. He didn't say that in this interview. He said it in a different context, but it's a movie. And so they only have a certain amount of time to tell the story. So they will take creative liberties. And sometimes if you watch a movie, like if you've seen the movie about James Brown, they'll they'll start in his, they'll be telling a story about something that happened in his adulthood, and then they'll do a flashback to his childhood, and then go back to his adulthood. And so the chronology doesn't all match up in the movie, but they jump from here to there in order to tell you more about who he was so that you can see him in the way that they want you to see him. Am I making sense? So in the same way, the Gospels will take creative liberties in the chronology of things, in the details of things, in order to portray a truth that they want you to see about who Jesus is. That's why I say the Gospels are not simply historical documents, they are primarily theological documents. And we have to remember this as we read John, because when we read John, particularly this story that we're about to read, we might be tempted to read it through the lens of the other accounts of the Gospels. Let me show you what I mean. This is when Jesus walks on the water. All right, this is a very famous episode in the life of Jesus, when Jesus walked on the water. And when we look at this story, we're going to understand a perspective that we need to have in turbulent times. It says, when evening came, his disciples, Jesus' disciples, went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind, everybody say strong wind, a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. The disciples got in a boat. It was nighttime. And then they started to experience some turbulence, some wind, a strong wind, and made things rocky. It disrupted their course. It disrupted their experience, their journey, their course to the other side. But something particular, there's a particular detail about John's account of this story that really stands out to me. It's the fact that Jesus never tells the wind to stop. You notice that? Jesus, in this story, does not tell the wind to stop. Now, if we read Matthew's account, the wind stops as soon as Jesus gets into the boat. In Mark's account, Jesus tells the wind to stop. But in John's account, he does not say one word to the wind. And so if you read this passage of Scripture and you begin to think about other times when it was dark and there was a strong wind over the water, it might take you back to Genesis chapter 1, where it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void." This is before God said, "Let there be light." It said that there was a wind, a ruach in Hebrew, or the Spirit of God, hovering and blowing across the water. It might take you back to Exodus chapter 14. Before God parted the Red Sea, it said that there was a strong wind that was blowing eastward over the Red Sea all night long. Wind. You might take you back to when God was about to create the church. And before God created the church, and the disciples were in the upper room, and the first thing that announced the presence of God, they said they heard the sound of a mighty rushing wind. Wind and the Spirit of God. You see, in Matthew and Mark's account, the wind was an adversary. But the reason why Jesus doesn't tell the wind to die down in John's gospel is because Jesus is the wind. Jesus is the wind. Sometimes turbulence and wind in your life is a sign that God is approaching. Sometimes when things get disturbed and things get rocky and bumpy and turbulent in your life, it's not because you're moving in the wrong direction. It's because you're getting close to where God wants you to be. Turbulence and the presence of God often go together. It was there in the beginning of creation. It was there at the Red Sea. It was there when God created the church in Acts chapter 2. Sometimes turbulence is what announces the fact that you're close to the promise, that you're close to the presence of the